Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Jeff Fritz. Jeff is a senior program manager in Microsoft's Developer Outreach Group and works with the community on open source projects and the new Microsoft.NET Core framework, which is what I want to talk with him about. As a longtime web developer, Jeff has experience in large and small applications across a variety of verticals. He knows how to build for performance and practicality, and most important, he recently released a new book called ASP.NET Core in 24 hours. That's a Sam's book, Sam's Teach Yourself, and you can get that on Amazon and just about anywhere. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, it's great to be back.
So you have a new book.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That was a labor getting that done and chasing the versions of ASP.NET Core as it was being released.
Well, I want to talk to you about ASP.NET Core and .NET Core in general, but I want to start with the book. One of the things I really like about it is that it starts and continues down and dirty. It gives you a very detailed explanation of how to work with ASP.NET Core without reference to a particular development environment or editor.
Yeah, I felt that was kind of important for folks that were coming in because there is so much flexibility. You have so much choice available to you now with the framework, with the development languages that you can use. And I want it to be open to anybody to jump in and use. You're on a Mac? Great. Here are some of the tools that you can use. You're on Linux and you prefer to use VI? Great. Go ahead and use that. But of course, if you want to use Visual Studio 2017, that's of course the Cadillac. That's where we like people to enjoy working. Go for it. That's available too.
Yes, it's very cool that you can do that. And the starting point for this is that ASP.NET Core is cross-platform. And I guess we have to back up to .NET Core itself, which is still new enough that maybe you can walk us through some of the highlights of .NET Core and ASP.NET Core.
Sure. So .NET Core is the new .NET framework on the block. Of course, everybody's familiar with the .NET framework that's been available from Microsoft since about 2001, 2002. It runs on Windows and runs great, hosting websites with Internet Information Server. But that's .NET framework. That's been around for 15 years. It's got a certain amount of boundaries within the Microsoft ecosystem in which it lives. But when we start thinking about building web applications, and we want to think about building things that are cloud scale, and we want to start targeting things that are more than just Windows. We want to get into containers. We want to get into other environments. We want to enable everyone, whether they're on Mac, Linux, or Windows, to start programming and building web applications. Well, then we need to get out of the box. We need to get outside of Windows, and we need to do that with a new framework that's really optimized for being able to slide in those different operating system runtimes. So that was some of the driving force behind the concept of the .NET Core framework. Now, that means that Microsoft is more or less then maintaining three different .NET frameworks, right? They have the .NET framework that runs on Windows that we know and love and has been around for a very long time. We've got the brand new .NET Core that's been available now for about 2 or 3 years at various levels of beta. And now today, here in 2018, it's available as a 2.0 release. And we've also got those Xamarin frameworks and Mono that are out there that run and help build applications that are client-based applications on Mac, on your iPhone, on your Android phone, on various game systems, run great, but we've end up now with these three or four different frameworks that Microsoft is maintaining at one level or another. But really, .NET Core is the one that we're focusing on for server-side interactions and cloud-scale capabilities. So we want to build our new ASP.NET framework on top of that, and that's where ASP.NET Core comes in. So you've got the same name there to help it line up, make it seem like it makes sense that the two work together nicely. ASP.NET Core runs great on .NET Core. And that means you can write applications using that familiar ASP.NET MVC paradigm or Web API paradigm also, and deliver and run that on .NET Core. It'll run on a Linux machine. It'll run on a Mac, Windows, of course, and it'll run in those Docker containers. It runs great on everybody's cloud out there. But ASP.NET Core, we want to make sure that there's still space for our folks who are running on .NET Framework. So if you want to run your application not just on .NET Core, you can run it on .NET Framework also, and it'll run great on Windows if that's the way you'd like to go.
Well, that was a great summary. Thank you. And it was nice talking to you.
It was a lot, I know. There's so much there.
Your book focuses to some degree on command line interaction with ASP.NET Core. Can you talk a little bit about the advantage of that and how that works if you're actually using Visual Studio?
Sure. So, I mean, let's face it, the common user interface that we have, no matter what operating system you're on, or if you know you're in a container or in the cloud, of all of those locations, you have a command line. You have some way to send commands into whatever that operating system is, right?
Right.
So let's break things down. Let's let .NET build and run at that most common layer that everybody has. And this wasn't something that you could do with .NET Framework in the past, right? The only way to build and run your application was to run through MS Build and find, you know, have it deliver an exe or load it into another web server to run and host things. And you ended up having to bring half of the SDK, the .NET SDK, along with you. Well, let's rethink that. Let's go to some of the ways that other folks do it in their other programming languages, and let's simplify things so you can use whatever text editor you want to write code. And then that command line makes it real easy and really clear exactly when you're building, when you're running your website, when you're restoring packages, right? That's a new feature in a lot of programming languages and frameworks that we've seen over the past, half dozen years, is there's third-party packages you're going to load. And we need to download them from another location, add them as a reference. Okay, you know, these are features that people want to have in their modern frameworks. So let's give them that at the lowest level possible right there on the command line. Now, to answer the second part of the question, well, if I'm running in full Visual Studio, or if I'm running in Visual Studio Code, do I really need to have that command line, right? How does that interaction work? So both of those editors have an interface where they actually call that command line tool in the background. It's the exact same commands that you would execute on the command line. Well, terrific. That means Microsoft isn't hiding any feature. There's no optimized way to sneak in and build .NET on the side. No. It's calling .NET build when you press that F5 button in Visual Studio. It's attaching its own debugger a little bit later in the game if you're using the debugger in Visual Studio. But you know what? It's still building and still running your application the same way as if you're on the command line.
Okay. If a person is a fairly proficient ASP.NET programmer, let's say ASP.NET MVC, and they want to make the transition to ASP.NET Core, how steep a learning curve is that? How different is it?
You know what? It's a great question. And fortunately, we've kept a lot of the paradigms the same, right? You still have a controller class you're going to inherit from. You're still building controllers that return action methods to format with Razor templates. Same things you've been doing in the past. You have route tables. You're familiar with routing from ASP.NET MVC. Routing is still there, and it's still in the same format in ASP.NET Core. But there are a couple of enhancements that you are going to see that are, they're really one-time things that you're going to have to learn and implement. But, you know, after you configure, and what I'm particularly thinking about is the startup class for ASP.NET Core, where before you would have different methods that you would call from your global ASAX file to configure routing and configure packaging of your different static assets in your project. Well, now we have all of those things to configure your application in one class called startup.cs. That's the file name, I'm sorry, is startup.cs. And you can configure a dependency injection container right there. We give you a default one it's not advanced, but it does the job. It manages a couple different scopes of objects. And then you can configure your HTTP pipeline. Real easy to lay out and understand exactly how your web server is going to interact with those folks that are browsing and interacting with the application. So once you learn a little bit around that startup class and how the project is structured with that, it becomes pretty easy to then be able to focus for the lion's share of your development on, you know, building Razor views, writing controllers, and interacting with a data source or writing your own business logic. You get to focus on those things that you've been doing for a very long time and you're probably familiar with as an MVC developer.
So what am I going to experience that's different or that's difficult?
So what's new is that the first thing that I look at is web API is gone, but not really.
Okay.
And that sounds weird to say, but trust me on this, right? I mentioned that you still have a controller for MVC. Well, that controller class is also the same controller that we used to call API controller in the old web API days with .NET Framework 4.7.1 and earlier. So you have one controller class that knows how to respond to those HTTP verbs. It knows how to interact and do the different serialization and deserialization actions that we used to see with web API, but it's in the same place. It's one class, one thing to understand in order to do the formatting properly, coming and going back and forth between web API and MVC. It just makes sense. Have one controller. We've got some new user interface concepts that we call view components and tag helpers. These are ways for you to reuse bits of HTML and business logic to format your user interface without having to rewrite a whole bunch of C# code or Razor templates. So that's pretty cool to see those things hanging out there. And we've also got a new feature called JavaScript services that folks are really interested in seeing and working with. And JavaScript services is a way for you to run Angular, Vue.js, React, even Aurelia on the server side as part of your application so that it compiles and delivers rendered HTML that your Angular, Vue, React, or Aurelia code would have output on that first request to the page. So Angular folks call this Angular Universal when they see this in other frameworks. We call it JavaScript services, and you get this capability to deliver fully rendered HTML without having to change your code at all. You continue writing your Angular app. It just looks and feels like a server-side app to ASP.NET. If the requests come in and they can handle the JavaScript, well, the JavaScript will be served after the initial request and all that great client-side functionality will kick in and you'll get the same performance that you expect client-side, but with the great tooling and servicing server-side that you expect from ASP.NET.
Yeah, I was interested and frankly a little surprised that your book has 4 chapters on Angular. So clearly you were feeling that Angular is, if not a key component in ASP.NET Core, a key component in putting together an application to work with ASP.NET Core.
I think Angular right now at the time that I started writing the book, it was the top JavaScript framework to use when building a web when you're building a web project. So I want to make sure that folks that haven't seen Angular and might be new to ASP.NET Core, they get the full picture of, you know, here's a great modern way to build a web application. And yeah, let's get you up to speed quick on some of these Angular topics. There's other places to go to get the full knowledge on Angular. And that's great. But here's, you know, really great features that make it easy to develop and work with client-side code that, you know what, the industry has really embraced and extended. Oh my gosh, it's amazing all the stuff out there for Angular.
Yes. Let me go in a slightly different direction with you. You have a chapter on Docker and on containers. And is that the preferable way to deploy to Azure through a Docker container?
You know what? It's all about choice. You certainly can deploy with a Docker container to Azure. You can deploy to everybody else's cloud with a Docker container, and it'll run great, and you end up with that same environment both on your workstation as a developer, because you can run Docker, of course, locally, as you do in the cloud. But on Azure, there's other ways that you can deploy using App Service. Of course, there's Service Fabric. You can even stand up a virtual machine and install and run it and manage that server any way that you would like and have your application running on that. There's lots of choices out there, and we don't want to constrain you from being able to run in any of those different environments.
Sounds like what I've been hearing from Microsoft about .NET Core in general, and certainly about ASP.NET Core, that it is write anywhere, run anywhere. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about containers a little bit more. Why would somebody want to develop in a container and deploy in a container?
Oh, great question. And I've started to become really enamored with containers. What this lets me do is I get away from, those days. Jesse, years ago, I used to deploy web applications to two or three web servers, and I had to take them down in the middle of the night, deploy one at a time, and slowly bring them back up and add them back into my load balancer. And it was a very manual process. And I had to copy files and update each one of my servers individually. And that Word document we used to have with here's all the steps that we need to make sure we do to deploy our application just goes away, because the container lets me take my application and stamp an image of it. Okay, I like to think of it as a cookie cutter. I get to create a cookie cutter that says this is what my web application looks like, and I can spin off instances of that container quickly and easily without any penalty to performance, right? To be able to bring up a traditional Windows 2016 server that's running IIS with .NET Framework on it, it takes a couple minutes to get that started up. A Linux container running ASP.NET Core, I can have started and listening for requests in seconds, not even seconds, in milliseconds. It is crazy how fast it loads. Well, that's tremendous for me. That means I can respond and scale quickly. And since I have this cookie cutter Docker container image, I can stamp out dozens of these things quickly and easily. And then I've also got the concept of the Docker registries out there, where I can store a copy of this image somewhere out there, either on my private network or even out in the public. I like to use a private registry stored on Azure, so it's offsite and it's secured, so only I can access it. And when I want to deploy a new copy of my image, I log into my registry and I could say Docker run, point to my image, and I can run 2-3 copies of it in seconds. That's tremendous. It's a great way to scale and manage my application easily. Now, on the other side, how do I build and get it in that container? Well, now I can run CI/CD tools, whether it's TeamCity from JetBrains or VSTS from Microsoft, or even something like Jenkins, and have it build and use not just the .NET command line to build my ASP.NET Core application, but I can then use the Docker command line to build this cookie cutter image, my Docker image, and then save it off into my registry. Oh my gosh, terrific.
Well, I've talked to a number of developers who found the learning curve for ASP.NET MVC to be fairly steep, and there's a reluctance on some developers to move to yet another paradigm. What's the learning curve like for ASP.NET Core?
So a lot of the folks that I talk to they're already ASP.NET developers, right? As part of my full-time gig with Microsoft, I'm really focused on the existing developers, right? And encouraging those folks to continue using our tools to make them comfortable with the new things, the new features, the new facilities that are being made available. So I don't talk to too many folks that aren't familiar with ASP.NET Core from the start, but there are things that have been done with the newer version of ASP.NET Core to make it a little bit easier for folks who are more used to, say, things like PHP, where they're more page focused. So there's ideas like Razor pages that are part of the new version of ASP.NET Core. And that's great. That's a great way to give people that very page-focused way to interact. But then there's also Node developers who are familiar with the way that we construct a pipeline already in that startup class that I described earlier. So they're comfortable with that, but they're not as familiar and comfortable with that MVC structure. So there's a little bit of a learning curve there, and I don't think it's terribly steep. It's a question of folks seeing how we've implemented that MVC paradigm. Ruby developers are very comfortable when they see that MVC paradigm, but I think it's something that you can overcome, you know, if you look at a couple sample projects and you see how the pieces fit together. I don't feel that it's terribly steep, but the new options with Razor pages, I think, give folks the ability to shift and develop in the way that makes them most comfortable.
Fair enough. Let me pivot a bit to your bio, which says that you're in the Microsoft Developer Outreach Group. What is that group? What does it do, and how big is it?
So there's four of us on the group, and we're focused on how we keep folks updated, interacting with .NET, with Visual Studio, and how they can be more productive folks. Whether they're coming in from a JavaScript, a Python, some other language that isn't typically found in Visual Studio, but actually is now in Visual Studio Code. And we also want to make sure that there's a great education experience out there for folks that are going to college, that are going to university, or even if they're going to a programming boot camp and they want to learn and see more about how to be a developer, right? They want to get into our industry. So we're doing things to help those folks. And we're also making sure that our .NET community gets the great support that it needs through the .NET Foundation. And we want to manage those folks and their expectations, because there's a great ecosystem of products and languages and third-party tools out there that we want to ensure are available for everybody, and that folks get the legal support and the long-term support that they need to be able to depend on those projects and products. So it's a great collection of things that we do. We also support, of course, various events that are going on around the country. We run our own events, including things like the .NET Conf virtual conference. That was we held the last one of those in, what was that, September 2017. There'll be another one, I'm sure, in 2018. And of course, we show up and help out at events like Build and Ignite, Dev Intersection, VS Live. Some of these developer conferences that you see Microsoft sponsor will show up at and help out.